Hey, this is Monica, and you're listening to episode 47 of the Positive Looks Good on You podcast. Welcome to the Positive Looks Good on You podcast. I'm your host, Monica Byron. I am here to help you become the best you that you can be. I will be giving you tips on how to improve your life through a positive mindset and through fitness. Now let's dive into today's episode. Today's episode is brought to you by my Gaining Confidence ebook. This ebook is for you if you struggle to feel confident in your skin, if you struggle to feel good enough, if you struggle looking at your body in the mirror, if you struggle trying on clothes. If you have any of those struggles, this ebook is for you. This ebook compiles 12 life lessons that I have learned to gain my own confidence. Going from having no confidence to being completely confident in my life, it has completely changed my life. And I want that for you. This ebook has a 12-week workout plan, as well as 12 individual goals for each week that you get through your email, and you get a video from me explaining the exact goal and how to go about it. So if this sounds like something that you want, you need to get your hands on this. If you want to feel better in your skin, if you want to feel better in your clothes, if you want to feel good in a bathing suit and block everything else out that tells you that you don't feel good in your life, then you need to get this ebook. Click the link in my bio on Instagram and start changing your life today. Hey girl, hey. If you're a guy, hey to you too, but I assume that if you're listening to this, you're probably a female. Anyway, today's episode is very near and dear to my heart. Last night, I read an article that my friend Jill sent me. Hey Jill, thank you for sending me this article if you're listening. And it truly, truly, truly resonated with me. And just every paragraph, I was like, oh my gosh, yes. Oh my gosh, this is so true. And I just, after I read it, I was like, I need to tell as many people about this article as possible, because I think that this author, who is Jessica Knoll, who I don't believe I've read any of her work yet, but I'm definitely going to. And by the time this episode airs, I may have started one of her books already. But I just read this article last night, and gosh, it's just so good. She put into words so many thoughts that I've had and so many things that I have struggled with and things that women, I think, struggle with that we don't necessarily tend to stop and think about, almost how silly it is. So when it's written in an article like this, it kind of like really hits you. And anyway, so I am actually going to read the article to you in this podcast episode, and then I want to talk about it afterward. Because like I said, again, it's just so amazing, and I think it puts so many of my thoughts and feelings into an article, and it was very well written in my opinion. So it was on the New York Times app, and it was called Smash the Wellness Industry. Again, it's by Jessica Knoll. And here we go. A few months ago, I had lunch with the writer behind one of my favorite movies of the year, the agent who made the deal and the producer who packaged the project. I wanted to hear all about the process and perhaps find an opportunity to collaborate. When the server came to take our order, I flashed to that scene in Romy and Michelle's high school reunion when Mira Sorvino walks into a diner in a striped skirt, suit and ask the waitress, "Do you have some sort of businesswoman special?" Had there been any sort of businesswoman special that day, our group probably couldn't have ordered it. Someone was slogging through the Whole30 program, someone had eliminated dairy, and someone else was simply trying to be quote-unquote good after a quote-unquote bad weekend. The producer said it didn't matter how quote-unquote good she was. She had lost the baby weight, and though she may look tolerable in clothes, under her Spanx, her stomach was a horror show. The writer said she had so much cellulite on her thighs, she looked diseased. I gazed around the restaurant, longingly, wondering what the men eating cheeseburgers were talking about. At one time, I too would gleefully have torn myself apart. I despised my body, and my devotion to changing it amounted to years of unpaid labor, starting with a bout of bulimia in high school. In preparation for my wedding, I worked out twice a day on 800 calories. From there, I moved on to counting macros, replacing rice with cauliflower pellets, 13-day cleanses, intermittent fasting, and an elimination diet that barred sugar, dairy, and nightshades like potatoes. Every new regimen ended in the same violent binge. I'd wait for my husband to go to bed so that I could obliterate the pantry without him asking, "Are you okay?" For the next few days, I would throw myself on the altar of quote-unquote clean eating, only to start the cycle all over again. I called this poisonous relationship between a body I was indoctrinated to hate and food I had been taught to fear quote-unquote wellness. This was before I could recognize wellness culture for what it was, a dangerous con that seduces smart women with pseudoscientific claims of increasing energy, reducing inflammation, lowering the risk of cancer, and healing skin, gut, and fertility problems. But at its core, quote-unquote wellness is about weight loss. It demonizes calorically dense and delicious foods, preserving a vicious fallacy. Thin is healthy, and healthy is thin. Almost 3 years ago, I moved to Los Angeles from New York. After death and divorce, moving is supposed to be the most stressful thing you can go through, and eating became myself. I had a second book and a screenplay due, a new city to explore and friends to make, but I could hardly focus on any of that for how crazy I felt around food. So I did a desperate thing. I searched, quote-unquote, intuitive eating online. Thanks to a stint at a health magazine, I had a glancing understanding of the philosophy, which encourages a return to the innate wisdom we had as babies, about when to stop eating, what tastes good, and how it makes our bodies feel. I might have sought it out sooner if not for the part where you learn to accept how your body looks once you stop restricting food, even if that version of your body is larger than you would like. The search led me to a nearby dietitian who is considered by some to be one of the founding mothers of intuitive eating. I picked up the phone. Intuitive eating has been around for decades, but it's suddenly receiving a lot of attention. Perhaps it's because women are finally starting to interrogate the systems that hurt and exploit us. Perhaps it's because we are driven and ambitious and we need energy. Not lightheaded, leafy greens energy, but real energy, the kind that comes from eating the hearty foods men eat. I had paid a lot of money to see a dietitian once before in New York. When I told her that I loved food, that I'd always had a big appetite, she had nodded sympathetically as if I had a tough road ahead of me. Quote, "The thing is," end quote, she said with a grimace, quote, "you're a small person and you don't need a lot of food," end quote. The new dietitian had a different take. Quote, "What a gift," quote, she said appreciatively, "to love food. It's one of the greatest pleasures in life. Can you think of your appetite as a gift?" End quote. It took me a moment to wrap my head around such a radical suggestion. Then I began to cry. 2 years into my work with her, I feel lighter than I ever have. Food is a part of my life, a fun part, but it no longer tastes irresistible the way it did when I told myself I couldn't have it. My body looks as it always has when I'm not restricting or binging. I'm not quote-unquote good one day so that I can be quote-unquote bad another, which I never foolishly celebrated as balance. Occasionally, when I'm stressed, I comfort myself with food, and my dietitian assures me that that's an acceptable kind of hunger, too. Emotional eating is a coping mechanism. We're told it is an unhealthy habit, one we must break, but that's another wellness lie. It is not vodka in our morning coffee. My binges stopped once I stopped judging myself for wanting to eat the foods, quote-unquote, wellness, vilified, sometimes for reasons other than physical hunger. I no longer define food as whole or clean or sinful or a cheat. It has no moral value. Neither should my weight, though I'm still trying to separate my worth from my appearance. They are two necklaces that have gotten tangled over the course of my 35 years. They're thin metal chains tied up in thin metal knots. Eventually, I will pry them apart. Most days, I feel good in my skin. That said, I am probably never going to love my body, and that's okay. I think loving our bodies is not only an unrealistic goal in our appearance-obsessed society, but also a limiting one. No one is telling men that they need to love their bodies to live full and meaningful lives. We don't need to love our bodies to respect them. The diet industry is a virus, and viruses are smart. It has survived all these decades by adapting, but it's as dangerous as ever. In 2019, dieting presents itself as wellness and clean eating, duping modern feminists to participate under the guise of health. Wellness influencers attract sponsorships and hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram by tying before and after selfies to inspiring narratives. Go from sluggish to vibrant, insecure to confident, foggy brain to clear-eyed. But when you have to deprive, punish, and isolate yourself to look quote-unquote good, it is impossible to feel good. I was my sickest and loneliest when I appeared my healthiest. If these wellness influencers really cared about health, they might tell you that yo-yo dieting in women may increase their risk for heart disease, according to a recent preliminary study presented to the American Heart Association. They may also promote behaviors that increase community and connection, like going out to a meal with a friend or joining a book club. These activities are sustainable and have been scientifically linked to improve health, yet are often at odds with solitary, draining work of trying to micromanage every bite of food that goes into your mouth. The wellness industry is the diet industry, and the diet industry is a function of the patriarchal beauty standard under which women either punish themselves to become smaller or are punished for failing to comply, and the stress of this hurts our health too. I am a thin white woman, and shame, the derision I have experienced for failing to be even thinner, is nothing compared with what women in less compliant bodies bear. Wellness is a largely white privileged enterprise catering to largely white privileged, already thin and able-bodied women. Promoting exercise only, they have the time to do, and Tuscan kale only, they have the resources to buy. Finally, wellness also contributes to the insulting cultural subtext that women cannot be trusted to make decisions when it comes to our own bodies, even when it comes to nourishing them. We must adhere to some sort of quote-unquote program or we will go off the rails. We cannot push to eradicate the harassment, abuse, and oppression of women while continuing to serve a system that demands we hurt ourselves to be more attractive and less threatening to men. And yet, that is exactly what we are doing when we sit around the lunch table and call our stomachs horror shows. There is something called the Bechdel test for film, developed by Ashley Bechdel in 1985, an American cartoonist. The idea is that the film must satisfy three requirements to pass. One, feature at least two women who, two, talk to each other about, three, something other than a man. Sounds simple, but a shocking number of films have failed to pass. In 2019, I want to propose a new kind of test. Women, can two or more of us get together without mentioning our bodies and diets? It would be a small act of resistance and a kindness to ourselves. When men sit down to a business lunch, they don't waste it pointing out every flaw on their bodies. They discuss ideas, strategies, their plans to take up more space than they already do. Let's lunch like that. Who's eating with me? And again, this was written by Jessica Knoll, and it says that she is the author of the novels Luckiest Girl Alive and The Favorite Sister. So I'll probably be checking those out. But gosh, what an article. I just, oh my gosh, it's so amazing for so many different reasons. First of all, it's so true that us as women tend to comment on each other's, not necessarily each other's weight, but I'm sure if you've ever lost, you know, some weight, that if you haven't seen somebody in a little while, a friend will come up to you and be like, oh my gosh, you look so great. You look so amazing. You've lost so much weight. And that's great. And it feels good, especially if you have tried to lose weight. But again, that's kind of usually one of the first things out of our mouths. And it's so true. The very beginning paragraphs, how she was talking about sitting at lunch and how someone out of the group was probably doing Whole30, or someone probably eliminated dairy, or someone was trying to act good after they had a quote unquote bad weekend. And I think that is so true. How many times have you ordered a salad at lunch because you felt that you should, or you wanted to feel good, even though it's not even what you wanted? And the fact that she points out that men don't sit around and talk about what they're going to order, how many calories it is, and what diet they're on, and how it may go against their diet, and how much weight they might gain, or how much they might have to work out to work it off. Guys just, you know, I assume, get to the point. they order what they want, and not to say that, you know, they're healthy and making the best decisions, but if you look at it from the perspective of getting things done, getting ideas out there, especially if, like she was talking about, it's like a lunch date where, you know, you're meeting with work people, coworkers, employees, something like that, then I highly doubt men are going to waste even 2 minutes, you know, talking about their looks and their food. And again, that's, they're able to get more done when they aren't worried about that. A lot of this also stems from years and years and years of the so-called wellness industry and the so-called fitness industry. From our grandmothers to our mothers to our aunts to our cousins and friends, we have been told so many times, and it's been ingrained in our brains, that thin is best and skinny is best and dieting is just what women do and being as small as possible is what you should always aim for. And like I said, this, you know, was passed down all the way from basically all generations of the women that we have followed. And, you know, in our lifetime, it started when we were young with, like I said, our grandmothers and our mothers. And then it led into, you know, the media back then, which would have been mostly movies and TV, celebrities, and then magazines. You know, we would always, as teenagers, look at Cosmopolitan and Teen Vogue and things like that. And there wasn't really diversity when it came to size. So that's all we saw. And even if somebody didn't say specifically to us, you have to be this size, well, the only people that we were seeing on TV, in the movies, in the magazines, were very thin people who had very nicely proportioned bodies. So that's automatically what was in our brains to strive for. And now it's, you know, mostly social media, and it's the fitness accounts and the swimsuit models and that sort of thing that we are constantly seeing, and accounts that portray this life of having the best body and not making it look hard. And again, it's just in our face that that's how we should look in today's society still. So that's a huge part of it. And another thing that really connected to me is, and I'm sure this would connect to you too listening, is the idea of the good and the bad foods and how we tie so much emotion and how we feel and how we're comforted with food. So how many times have you, you know, done quote unquote good all week? You've eaten all your clean food, you've had all your salads, your vegetables, your chicken, your fish all week, and then on the weekend you go out, you have a party, you go out with your friends, you go out to dinner, you have the bread, you have the wine, you have the cocktails, you maybe, or maybe you stay in and you have beer and pizza with your boyfriend or your spouse, your partner, and so all weekend, you know, you are quote unquote bad. And then on Monday, again, you are turning quote unquote good because you're going to eat again the salads and the vegetables and the fruit and all of that. And I have been there, sister. I have been there. I did this for years. I was in this cycle and I equated my weekends to being bad, or whenever I went out to eat, to being bad, and that I was being a bad person when I ate pizza and things like ice cream, you know? So we just happen to put these emotions with these foods. And when she said in the article, this part that says, food is a part of my life, a fun part, but it no longer tastes irresistible the way it did when I told myself I couldn't have it. My body looks as it always has when I'm not restricting or binging. I'm not quote unquote good one day so that I can be quote unquote bad another, which I once foolishly celebrated as balance. And oh my gosh, haven't you been there? Like I just said, I was there for so long. That hit me so hard. And I think it's just, again, it's natural for us to tie these emotions to food. And that was a really hard thing for me to, you know, struggle through. And I'm not gonna lie, sometimes it's still hard for me. I try my best, and most of the time I do well with not tying food to certain emotions and making me feel a certain way, but it is so ingrained in me for years and years and years of growing up and thinking that certain foods were bad. A good example, actually, that not too long ago on my Instagram stories, I put that I ate an entire bagel. And for some people, that might mean nothing. But I, since high school, while I was in high school, I viewed carbs as the devil. I despised carbs. I tried not to eat carbs. Again, this was the quote-unquote wellness industry. If it wasn't low fat or low carb or no carb, then it was quote-unquote bad for you. That's what I had ingrained in my mind for years. So it's still hard for me to see things that are mainly carbs as okay to eat and see them as fuel instead of a bad food. So for me to be able to eat an entire bagel and not feel ashamed and not feel bad and not let it lead to eating other things that don't, you know, fuel my body, that was a big thing for me. So it's tough, and you might be in, you know, in the thick of it. You might still be feeling that foods are good and bad. You might still tie your emotions to that and feel those ways when you eat or don't eat certain foods. And I want you to know that that is completely normal. And I also want you to know that you can break the cycle. What I did was I started asking myself before I was about to eat something, you know, why I wanted that food, why I was going to make that choice, and how that food was going to make me feel. So I, you know, started to reframe foods by the way it made me personally feel and not by what someone else, you know, portrayed this food as. So that's what has helped me over the past couple of years. And like I said, it's still a practice that I work on. It's gotten so much better, and I'm able to actually enjoy food, like Jessica said in the article. And food is just food. That's what it is. And if you listening can get to that point, that would be so amazing as well, if it's something that you're struggling with. Yeah, that point was just really really good. obviously, if you can't tell, I just absolutely love this article. It seemed like she put all these words cohesively into sentences and paragraphs, all of these things that I have also been through and that I think now and that I want to tell other women. And that's why I thought it was so important to make this episode. So the one that I want to end with is where she talked about loving her body. And I'll say that this article actually came at an absolutely perfect time for me to read after I was struggling to love my body over the weekend. And I myself have come a super long way from hating my body to now at least loving parts of my body. And if I don't love it, then at least I, in the moment, I don't start picking apart my body, which is something I used to do. And I can actually stand there in the mirror and tell myself that I love myself. And I can tell my certain parts of my body that I'm not 100% happy with. I can still stand there and say that I love myself. And I accept my body and I am thankful for what my body can do for me. So that's been a huge transformation in my personal journey and my experiences. But I was still struggling with, you know, kind of when am I going to love my body? Because it was still a struggle for me. I do tell myself all the time that I love my body and it has helped me tremendously. But still there was that little like 5% of me that's like, you know, when am I actually just going to love my body and why am I still struggling with this? Even though the struggle is a completely different level than it used to be, but it was still that little part of me that's like, why is it still a struggle? So the part that she said, most days I feel good in my skin. That said, I am probably never going to love my body and that's okay. I think loving our bodies is not only an unrealistic goal in our appearance obsessed society, but also a limiting one. No one is telling men that they need to love their bodies to live full and meaningful lives. We don't need to love our bodies to respect them. Whew. Yes, girl. So that for me, like I said, came at the absolute perfect time because I was asking myself these questions. Why am I still struggling? You know, and that almost gave me permission to just think about how far I have come and look at it at a different lens and just, you know, accept that maybe I won't 110% love my body and that's okay, like she said. And me coming as far as I have and not picking my body apart and still being thankful, still accepting it and still being able to love myself and not hate anything when I look in the mirror is huge. So respecting and accepting your body is where we all need to get to. Maybe it's not going to be loving our bodies 100% every single day. And like she said, I feel good in my skin most days. And that's me as well. And again, you might not be there yet. And my goal for you is to get there. I want you to feel good in your skin, in your clothes, when you look in the mirror. Because, gosh, it's changed my life so much. And I truly, truly, truly want you listening to this. I want you to get there. But also know that maybe loving your body 100% and 100% of the time isn't realistic. So, gosh, yeah, that article, I absolutely love it. So again, it was by Jessica Knoll. I read it from the New York Times app. And I would honestly love your feedback if you, whatever you thought about the episode, the article that was in this episode, if you could message me after you listen to this, if you could put this up on your Instagram stories and tag me as you're listening, I would absolutely love it. I want every woman to read this article and have permission and know that we are all struggling. You're not alone. Some of us may be a little bit further than others. Some of us might be able to help others in different ways through experience and things that we've been through. But it's 2019. We have to stop this notion and this belief that thin is best, skinny is best. That's where we need to be. We all need to be on a diet, and food rules our life, and we're good and we're bad if we do and we don't do these things and eat these foods. We just have to stop it. We keep perpetuating this. We keep saying these things, and we keep falling into, you know, this quote unquote wellness culture, and we just got to stop. So, like I said, spread this episode with every woman that you know, please, because not only is it spreading this positive podcast and this positive message, but it's also spreading this amazing article written by Jessica Knoll. And I think we really could become a community that is just happy in our bodies and happy in our lives, and not picking our bodies apart, not talking about our bodies and our diets all the stinking time, and not letting it rule our lives anymore. Let's just live life and have a community that is full of motivating each other to live our very best lives, and not to be looking at the calories all the time and worrying about what foods we shouldn't eat. And so we can actually sit down at lunches and dinners and on girls weekends and just talk and enjoy life for what it is and where we are, instead of wishing that our bodies were different. I love you so much. Thanks for listening to the episode. Don't forget to screenshot it, put it on your Instagram, tag me in it. Love you. If you enjoyed this episode, can you please do me a favor and screenshot and put it up on your social media, tagging me, so we can spread the word about the podcast? The only way we can spread the podcast, spread the positivity, is to let others know that it's out there. So you can do this by screenshotting the episode, putting it on your stories and social media. You can leave a review on iTunes. It's super fast, super easy, and even quicker, you can leave a quick rating of the podcast. I would super, super, super appreciate it. And this podcast can only grow because of you. And remember, positive looks good on you.